Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 6th of October, recording at 8:58 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first a quick review of the week. It's been a generally stunning performance by global stock markets, and just a little bit of profit-taking in here today. Government bonds, not surprisingly against the background of strong stock markets, have wobbled or lost upside momentum a bit, and they're down today. And the U.S. dollar, well, this is surprisingly strong. Here, I was going to say, given the consensus, or perhaps more accurately, I should say, because of the consensus, in other words, that bearish consensus that surrounds the dollar, but it has firmed in here today on some U.S. labor statistics, which, to my thinking, were fairly mixed. Elsewhere, this has been a fascinating week in terms of the oil price, where we have seen the entire oil complex, actually, where we have seen a lot of churning activity, two-way activity, indicating that, to me at any rate, that the bottoming out process is underway, and natural gas has been rising for, this must be at least the seventh or eighth consecutive day here so far. Excuse me. And metals. Well, industrial metals saw a shakeout and have really firmed again and have held up remarkably well. And precious metals, they saw some real selling pressure in here this week, and then subsequently steadied. I'm going to pause for a moment just to have a drink of water. Sorry for this. I hope that scratchy throat goes away, but if not, just bear with me if you can. Now, any other highlights in here to mention? I think that's pretty much, well, the grain and bean complex was firmer, although they gave up some of the earlier gains that we had seen today. Okay, in terms of global stock markets, there is an interesting report by Robin Griffiths that will lead off comment of the day once I've posted that. And he takes a more bearish view, feeling that there are some parallels with 1987. I'm not going to review all that because I've discussed it at length in what I've written. And he feels that we're likely to see some sharp selling pressure in here this month. Certainly in his opening introduction, you'll get that impression. I disagree. I don't see more than perhaps a wobble or two. I take the strength that we're seeing at face value, and it's spreading. In other words, it's spreading to some of the commodity-based indices, or commodity-influenced, resources-influenced indices, I should say, which include Australia, although Australia has a lot more going for it than just the resources companies, as you know, but nevertheless, it's got a heavier resources weighting than many other indices, but it's had a stunning performance here this week, and it actually began late last week, pushing up through some lateral resistance. Other commodity-based indices, such as Brazil, improved enormously. South Africa, back up to its highs. Mexico, a new high recently. So, really, the exceptions tend to be Canada, which is still lagging, although it's not doing all that badly. But if every stock market index looked like the Canadian index, I'd be worried right now, but they don't. So my hunch is that Canada will be pulled up by the others. and then be able to continue on its own as well. It won't, probably won't be on its own, but it would be able to continue on its own because I think the bearish sentiment towards the resources sector is likely to wane in coming weeks and months. So we're left really with underperformance. Okay, Japan has underperformed, but again had a good week in here. It's pretty well everything. Thailand, though, Thailand has certainly underperformed, but that's a special situation with the political uncertainty there. And the overall overwhelming message from these global stock markets is that the global correction for 2Q and 3Q was largely completed with the June sell-off, May-June sell-off, and that the overall upward trends are rising once again, and global liquidity is a big factor. Incidentally, there's an email in there which I used as a launchpad for a major discussion of both sentiment and liquidity, and that's really what the markets are all about. And that's what you see when you look at the price charts. And I think that new subscribers or newer subscribers in particular may find that an interesting piece. I hope so. So moving on here, I think that the environment is really quite favorable for equities. Now, I'm assuming in saying that, and this is a very, very big proviso, I'm assuming that central banks aren't going to suddenly get together and decide to raise short-term interest rates a few more times between now and the end of the year. I think that chance is extremely low, but if I was wrong in that conclusion and they did start hiking short-term rates again, and I'm talking about the Fed and the Bundesbank and the Bank of Japan, then that could well result in a shock and a sharp sell-off by stock markets. But I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're more worried about deflation. I think they're more worried about the U.S. slowdown, and probably rightly so. And I think they'll hold off. But we will see, to coin a phrase. But I'm left with a conclusion that the possibility of a further round of interest rate hikes at this time, this year, in other words, is really quite low, and that we're back in this bullish, I hate the term, but everybody uses it, Goldie stocks, Goldilocks rather, environment for equities, and that may well run into the 2007 period and on into 2008. Now, another factor that I would mention here, I find it virtually inconceivable that the Fed would raise interest rates prior to the November congressional elections in the United States. That would be too political. Would they then go on and raise interest rates after the election in the rundown to Christmas? I kind of doubt it. And I don't think they have any justification to raise interest rates again anyway. Just look at the oil price for one reason. Okay, on to government bonds. I feel that we've seen the best part of the rally, but when I look at the charts, I don't see any convincing evidence that the rally is over. When I look at the historic charts, I see plenty of evidence to suggest that the rally in government bond prices should not really go that much higher. When I look at the money supply growth, that is another factor that could well be a headwind for the bonds. Now, people will recall that coming off the 2003 lows, that money supply was the rising tide that was lifting all boats, including the government bonds. But they were the first to get into trouble and peak early on because investors who understand the knock-on effect of all that monetary liquidity realized that the inflationary pressures were always going to be building up as well. And so we had that very important peak in government bond prices back in June of 2003. I'm going to take another drink of water. I'm sorry about this. I might have a bit of a cold coming on. I hope not, but that causing the scratchy voice. Okay, I'll soldier on here. The U.S. dollar, strong performance in here today. I've been saying that maybe the dollar, which is mostly in a ranging pattern, but I'm just showing some signs of emerging out of its very very tight range on the upside. That probably it wasn't going to fall until we squeezed some of those dollar bears out of the market and got them to reverse their positions. In other words, all those people who tip up from the big banking houses on CNBC and Bloomberg TV, they're all dollar bears. And when we notice that they're is a majority of dollar bulls, that'll tell you that they've reversed their positions, and I would suspect that the greenback will be quite weak. I do think that the US needs a weaker dollar, or a weaker currency, I should say, more than most other countries. And I think it's likely to get it, certainly if Bernanke keeps that M2 growing, and the M3, which they don't publish anymore, will be growing, as Adrian Van Eck said, at approximately 150% of the M2 growth rate. Okay, moving on to the oil price. This is so important. The weak oil price that we have seen recently is, of course, bullish for stock markets. It's bullish for the global economy, at least for everybody other than the oil-producing countries. But they're still not doing that badly at these prices. But it is very bullish for everyone else. So I think that the growth slowdown that we're seeing in this quarter and likely to see in the first quarter of 2007, given the leads and lags, that'll be pretty much it, and we may actually see growth picking up once again and coming in on the higher side of overall expectations. And right now, stock markets are again benefiting from this oil price weakness. Now, how long is it going to stay? How long is oil going to stay down here? Well, I think it's bottoming out, as you know. I suspect it'll be it'll take a while to bottom out. In other words, we don't get a quick rally back up to the highs. And one reason for that, I think the U.S. is very keen to keep oil prices subdued in here, and gasoline prices subdued through those November elections. But I think really from thereafter, as global growth remains fairly strong, begins to pick up again, and we probably get some modest cuts by OPEC, despite all the leaks that occur. In other words, the producing above their quotas and so on, that will help the oil price to not only to bottom out, but to start to rise again. And the real factor there, which is going to remain undiminished, is the relentless annual increase in overall oil production. As I've mentioned so many times before, that even during that last recession, which covered parts of 2001 and 2002, the global demand for crude oil continued to rise. The rate slowed, but it continued to rise. Now we have the global economy synchronized in a period of economic expansion. I do not feel that the U.S. will slide into a recession because I think the Fed is backing off on the interest rate hikes, and there's enough going for the U.S. economy. I'm not as bullish as Adrian Van Eck in the report that I posted yesterday, but I've already said that I felt that growth would be coming a little bit better, not only for the world economy average, but also for the U.S. than people are currently forecasting for 2007. And therefore, I view this as no more than a medium-term correction for crude oil, and that it will be moving higher, and that will eventually cause problems and concerns once again. But let's enjoy this period, which while we have it, which is really quite favorable for global stock markets, as I keep mentioning. Now, what about these industrial metals? Well, I've been saying recently that following the huge advances, following the big Type 1 accelerations that we saw in a number of them, and most of all in copper and in zinc and in the nickel markets, and given the bearish, frenzied bearish commentary that we've seen regarding commodities, that if they were going to sell off, this was the time to do it, or this was the time when they were most likely to actually do it. Now, some contrarians among you might, well, we're all contrarians, aren't we? Contrarian thinkers might think, well, there's so much bearish sentiment around that they're not going to fall against that background. But my view is that, well, you've seen the domino effect. You saw the stock markets peak in May and start to come down. That contagion very quickly spread to the precious metal markets. The same people who'd been bidding up stocks, leveraging up, were also in the precious metals complex. Clearly, the evidence indicates that they were not anywhere near so heavily long of copper and zinc and nickel, etc., as they were long of gold and silver. Now, that's hardly surprising, given that the first their experience of dealing in those other markets, which, with the exception of copper, traded on the London Metal Exchange, is quite limited. And also because the prices had gone so high that even the bulls, such as myself, were having vertigo. So they didn't have the same positions in those markets. So it's really kind of a myth, in my view, that the whole copper boom and so on had been created by hedge funds. But there is still this risk. While the oil price is weak, while the precious metal complex is sort of struggling to hold support levels in this environment, there is a risk that we could see further weakness in those industrial metals. Mind you, they had a very good day in here today. And for instance, I'd been talking about nickel and that psychological resistance at 30,000. I felt that it had done enough, in getting up to 30,000 and would find that a barrier. Well, it has. But here we are today, 29,500 on the close. That's the 3-month futures price, LME. And the cash price, I may well have gone through, it's got to be close to a new high. Not quite a new high, I don't think, but it's at 31,575 here on today's close. Copper, big gains in here today. So, as I say, the whole sector is strong. Now, the real drivers here are, of course, the supply and elasticity. Remember, we had this sort of 21-year bear market for the industry. All the mining engineers and miners, they grew old, they retired or died off. And a lot of plant and equipment for mining was in a state of decay. And really, the whole sector had deteriorated because prices up until the beginning of this decade, prices had fallen to their lowest levels in real terms. That's inflation-adjusted terms. So we had not only that 21-year secular bear market, but prices, it was so severe that in real terms, as I say, prices fell to all-time lows. So it was absolutely devastating for the mining industry. Then along comes booming China, booming India, all these other emerging markets with huge populations suddenly getting the capitalistic message and giving up on their previous primitive economic models and doing very, very well indeed, not surprisingly. And then along comes the first synchronized global economic expansion in over a decade. And that alone, that synchronized global economic expansion, would be enough to cause a good bull market in the resources, but it would have probably been a cyclical bull market. In other words, 3, 4 years on the upside, as people had seen over and over and again, over and over again previously. But it's very different this time, to use those dangerous words, in my view. And despite the dangerous words, I think this case is easy to defend because these previously moribund economies that I was just mentioning are now suddenly the world's most rapidly growing growth engines. And this is absolutely phenomenal. This is unprecedented. So when we talk about a synchronized global economic expansion today, countries whose economies was not even on the radar, or barely on the radar, are now major, rapidly developing forces, building these huge cities, all the in with all the infrastructure that that requires, and they're developing huge middle class populations. And with all the consumption demand that goes on. And this is going to run and run and run for decades. That's why I was an earlier advocate of the commodity super cycle and maintain that this will be the biggest commodity super cycle of all time. And that's why I want to be invested in that sector, which is very out of favor now, which makes it a buying opportunity, not a selling opportunity. The only area where you have to be careful is if you are under short-term performance scrutiny, and you know what I mean, those are the some of the money managers who, if they don't do well over the period of a month, suddenly feel the heat, so they have to go jumping around in whatever sector is moving. Now, if you're not in that position, and also people who use a lot of leverage. Need to be wary in this environment because some of these resources can underperform for a little while longer. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I'm saying overall, they are at very interesting levels as far as the bulls are concerned. What I don't yet see is the evidence that they can sustain, technical evidence that they can sustain advances, but that occurs well off the lows. More often than are you see it when everybody sees it, when it's obvious, they will already be well off the low. So I maintain this is a buying area, and I've done a little bit of nibbling, not aggressively, but I'm looking forward to doing more. And we had an interesting day here in gold. Gold got hammered when oil, because oil fell. Early on, and let me see if I can still see that, see those prices. Yes, oil fell down to 58.84. Now it had closed yesterday. This is crude oil, NYME. It had closed at 60.03, and it fell to 58.84. It's been very volatile every day, as you probably realize. Then it bounced back, and it's currently trading at 59.81. So it's only down 22 cents in here today, and a dollar off its low that we had seen earlier in the day. And when oil fell, it's exerting such a strong psychological influence on the precious metals at this time that gold slumped down to 560. That was down 560 and a bit. That was down almost $14 from its close yesterday. But gold is trading right now in the after hours trading at 573.90, and it's pretty well the end of trading. Down only 40 cents on the day. So you see how important this oil currently is in terms of sentiment. But overall, I don't want to deal too much in the minutiae. We have an environment that I feel is exceptionally bullish for these resources and will remain so for a very long time. And of course they'll be volatile. That's always part of the territory, but we've seen most of the downside volatility, and the next big change will be the upside volatility. But in terms of actual trading tactics, those who go piling in a choppy environment and using a lot of leverage can very easily get into trouble. The best way to do it is to have small positions well within your capital, and then when the markets do start to trend upwards, then you can leverage up behind trailing in the money stops. Something I try to do, I do from time to time, and I'm starting to do it. I'm starting to do it now, not in the metals, but in some of these Asian market positions that I have. Well, I don't want to run on too much. I probably have already. So that's pretty much the big picture. Big basis in some of these grains and bean, these grain and bean complex, incidentally. And we did have that very interesting email on the El Nino earlier in the week. I think it was on Wednesday. So I'll just wrap up now and say it's been a fascinating week. We're entitled to a good rest here. I'm going to concerts and other cultural events. I hope you're doing something as equally delightful for yourself and your families, and I'll wish you all the very best.